Welcome to Home Ground. I'm Brian Kahn. We know the story in broad strokes. Anglo-Americans settled in the East, then moved west. Again and again, trade with Indians was replaced by war. War to take over the territory they lived in. In less than 100 years, the lower 48 states had been conquered. Many tribes were forced onto reservations. Off the national radar, what's been going on? Harry Barnes knows better than most. He's chairman of the Tribal Council of the Blackfeet Nation. Chairman Harry Barnes, many thanks for joining us on Home Ground.
I'm happy to be here.
Where'd you grow up? What did your folks do?
I grew up in Montana. My father was born in Butte. I was actually born in Spokane because mom and dad were transients between Spokane and in Montana. Went to every school in Cutbank, half of the ones in Browning, and proud of all of them.
How'd you get from Butte to Browning?
My father was an Irishman. He met my mother. They married. His family disowned him.
Because he married a Blackfeet woman?
Because he married an Indian, that's right. Never knew that side of the family very well until I met the magic of Ancestry.com.
Was that part of the family discussion for you growing up? Did you know about it as a child?
My dad unfortunately died when I was in the second grade, so I never learned much about that family. I learned my dad was an Irishman, and he was adopted. And so I really never knew the family name until a couple of years ago, and I found it. And it's not Barnes, it's Hunter.
You grew up on the reservation?
Mm-hmm, yes.
And schooling how?
I went to boarding school for a few years. Went to the public schools, both in Browning and Cutbank. So,
we just did a show with Senator Whitford, who discussed that her parents went to boarding school and that there was a transition initially. Boarding school was a cultural disconnect. Later, the boarding schools, according to her, we're more careful about trying to maintain cultural continuity in terms of that part of the educational experience. What was your personal experience?
Well, my mother was also a product of the boarding school experience. Of course, the boarding schools were a means of the federal government to enculturate the Native American into the white culture and assimilate them. Unfortunately, the process of assimilation is destruction of everything else. My mother's generation was that was whipped if they practiced their Blackfeet ways. And so that was kind of taken out of her. I was raised really in a house of alcohol abuse, drug abuse, So we really didn't practice the Blackfeet culture. We practiced the way of Budweiser, Olympia, things like that. So I never got exposed to my Blackfeet culture, unfortunately. And I'm just now learning it in the last 10 years.
So was your mother an alcoholic?
She was a working one because she raised 18 kids, 9 boys, 9 girls. Remembering, of course, my dad died when I was in second grade, and so she then struggled to raise us. I attribute everything good about me to her.
Wow.
So, amazing woman. A saint.
18 kids. She has an alcohol problem. How did she do it?
Did she abuse alcohol? Yes. Was she a constant drunk? No. But when she did, she probably went to extremes, because that's what I learned. In spite of that, she had a tremendous devotion to all of those kids. That was her career, I guess, really. Someone said, what'd your mother do? Well, she was mainly pregnant all of her life. But she did an outstanding job. When we had nothing, she found something. So she somehow fed us and clothed us and raised us and educated us.
She's no longer with you.
No, she died back in 74, 75.
At what age?
I think she was 59, 56, young age,
young.
Really. Although the age expectancy for Indians is much less than our counters in our white culture. And I say that I still have a lot of white culture on my dad's side, so I don't deny either one. I try to recognize them. We grew up in poverty. That's all we knew. Always had a house full, and whether it was just the siblings or their friends, always a house full. Shared a bed, with 4 of us in a bed, 5 of us in bed was not uncommon. You know, it's unfortunate because the one that wets the bed always was uphill. I don't know how that happened. You know, but that was the reality of growing up. But, you know, that's what we knew. But growing up in Browning and Cutbank, the abject poverty seemed to be more abject than when we lived in Spokane. And I can't explain that, but I just know it was true somehow.
If I ask you, who's Harry Barnes graduating from high school? Who is he? What are his main values? What does he want to do?
Young, stupid. I mean, I think I did all right in school. I was naive, a lot of those things. Always wondering, you know, what's life hold for me? We grow up with an identity crisis through the two different experiences, an experience of alcoholism and an experience of being Native American. Those are two different life experiences. It can be lived, the alcoholism can be experienced by any race or color, that doesn't matter, but the combined in with being an Indian and being in a household of alcohol abuse makes it hard to find identity. And as you speak to many Native people, you'll find you can pierce through some of it. Some will readily admit it and talk about it as you grow up with that identity crisis of who am I, what am I. I grew up in an age when I lived in Cutbank, the Indians lived on the north side and the white people lived on the south side. And you knew your boundaries. You didn't socialize after school while I could play basketball and football. During the day with all of my non-Indian friends, we didn't socialize after school. You grow up with that and you learn those lessons. Of course, I graduated high school in 1968, so we have the tumultuous change within our country. But it affects a young person, a teenager, then moving through the teen years, you try to find your identity, and it's difficult. So when I graduated high school, I really didn't know for sure who I was or where I was going. You know, I just went with the flow.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We are talking with the chairman of the Blackfeet tribe, Harry Barnes. After high school, what then?
Well, you know, I was always tangentially had specks of my Blackfeet culture, not really understanding it. I went on to college. I was in college for a year and then actually had one quarter of psychology. That's why I'm so smart in psychiatry. And then I was pursuing a course in architecture, and then Uncle Sam thought they needed me more.
Military
in
service?
The United States Army, that's correct. I was drafted.
Served what period of time?
I served for 3 years in about 70 to 73, 71.
Height of the Vietnam War, did the war affect you in any respect?
Well, it was at that time the war was coming down a little bit. They were still heavily drafting people and were still shipping people over there, but I reenlisted for a third year, and that gave me some other options, and I became what they call regular Army, and I chose my specialty and ended up in communications in European theater.
Did you learn anything in the military experience that was of use to you, positively or negatively?
There was a tremendous amount of negativity that provided positive learning experiences. You learn to get get along with a lot of different types of people, personalities, races. Different races, not racist, although the military did have their share of racists at the time. And so you learn to operate within a world of diversity of personalities and a diversity of races. That gives you a pretty broad understanding. And so I was probably at the right time for what I really saw as a college education. What it taught me is that I don't want to stay in the military, you know, because I couldn't. While I adapted and excelled, I didn't accept that way of life. I didn't care to pursue it, although I have a son now who's almost a career and nearing retirement in military, two sons in the military. I respect the military, absolutely, but it just wasn't what I wanted to go with.
Okay, you get out of the military, then what?
And I got drunk. I remembered the lessons I learned in my teen years and applied them, unfortunately, and But I did have a young wife and two children, and I did buckle down. I got a job, I worked, and then I got into an apprenticeship program, finished the apprenticeship program, became an electrician, applied my trade.
Where is this taking place?
In eastern Washington, North Idaho,
okay.
And back and forth to Montana. I still traveled back and forth. I actually worked over in Whitehall, and then years later realized that's where my father was adopted, was in Whitehall, and graduated from high school. And so I was of transient nature, but I was trying to somehow find an anchor. I married my high school sweetheart, still with her, through the grace of God. And so I think that probably was my anchor, because I was still flying all over the place and not settled, really. I achieved a fairly good job, elected leader of the electricians union, a lot of 1,200 plus members in various industries. I'm the number one person elected. I was reelected two more times. I spent 9 years there. Nearly drank myself to death and decided it was time to get out of that career. So I left it and then returned to Montana.
When you say you're elected to a union position where you are like a union rep, separate from being an active electrician, or you're just
You're separate from being an active electrician. You're the business manager, financial secretary. You're the.
So you have serious trade union experience then?
Absolutely. I'm what the conservative element refers to as labor goon.
All right, and you also said that throughout this period, once you got out of the military, you're drinking heavily.
I drink to extremes.
Okay.
I'm, again, a working, functioning, probably an alcoholic. And so you drink to extremes. Okay, you don't settle, I'm going to go have two drinks. No, you're going to drink the rest of the night until you can't. You run out of money or sobriety and pass out. And so that became an easy way of life.
Before we get to the Montana part of the story, if I understood you correctly, you leave the union work, you move back to Montana, and you stop drinking. Now, I'm going to ask you this because there's a lot of data showing that alcoholism is a serious problem in Native American communities. In your opinion and experience, is this connected with this identity issue that you're talking about, or is it something else?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I think a lot of it is the history of the Native Americans since colonization and since the treaties come about. We had our real identity snatched away when we became dependent wards of the federal government. Dependent wards is an important term in Native American life, because now instead of providing for ourselves, we were dependent on the man for food, clothing, shelter.
Is that a legal phrase that shows up in the statutes?
Dependent ward is, in fact, I think it's a legal description of the Native Americans' relationship to the federal government. They become a dependent ward. That's why everything is held in trust, because we're really not qualified to do that. And so the Native Americans, and not me back then, but eventually, you're called a savage, you're not worth anything. And so that message finally beats into the psyche. And so we end up with that identity crisis. And that is handed over generation. The poverty is things of three and four generations, and that contributes to the identity crisis. When you have trouble identifying who you are and you have self-worth issues, self-worth issues are when you don't feel good about yourself, you're somehow less than human, or you're not as good as that other football player because of your color of your skin. So you develop self-worth issues. Those self-worth issues manifest themselves into aberrant behavior. Okay, what's aberrant behavior? I'm going to go home and beat up my wife because I'm pretty sure I don't have a job because of her. That's that aberrant behavior. If I drink till I fall on the ground, that's aberrant behavior. That's not accepted normal societal behavior. So that's aberrant behavior. But that's those self-worth issues that are manifesting themselves in the aberrant behavior. I'm not going to come out and tell you I'm an alcoholic and I drink too much, but I'm going to act it out so you can see. And so that's what I was doing.
I'm hearing you say that your behavior, acting these things out, is fairly common in the American Indian community for the same identity crisis reasons. Am I misinterpreting what you're saying?
No, I think it is. I think it is. It's a phenomenon, not necessarily known to every other race, but because of the circumstances of our country's development and the development of this continent, then those scenarios became commonplace out west. Okay, not so much back east. Back east, they had a different solution. They just killed all the Indians, and that took care of the Indian problem. Out here, we finally started entering into treaties. Throughout the West, tribes, when they became that dependent ward again, that takes the soul out of the person. I was placed here to the Creator as a hunter and gatherer, okay? So I provided for my family. I fed them. We had food, clothing, shelter. We had everything we need. Then we became dependent upon the federal government for that food, clothing, and shelter because they killed all the buffalo. And so now I'm no longer the hunter and gatherer. I'm a dependent ward.
You and I met 3 hours ago at this conference.
That's great.
I look at this guy, and he looks to me like a sophisticated businessman. And I hear him talk, and he speaks with exceptional articulateness and a sense of responsibility. So my question is, how did you break the barriers?
Well, my personal journey is obviously not the same as everybody else's, but it was a renewal of spirituality. I was raised a Catholic, and I'm in the Catholic tradition, but I became more keenly aware of my Blackfeet culture, and I have some very special people that share lessons with me of the old way and how that works. To me, my Catholic faith and my renewed Blackfeet culture teaches me that I'm okay. I'm a good person. I'm all right.
Now, I understand this is just personal for you.
Sure.
Is it a combination of the two faiths? Did you have to walk away from the Catholic faith, or did you find synergy between them?
There was a synergy, but also a separate. In my belief, there's a goodness in both, and there is really salvation in both. Salvation, with your Creator, but salvation from yourself and those inner demons that you wrestle with. I've seen people that have come completely through the native spirituality and turn their lives around. I've seen people that come through the Catholic or the Christian faith as well and turn their lives around. My journey was really a combination of both, and it's a wondrous thing, because I've experienced it and I realize my Creator, which I believe my Creator is the Creator of Abraham, the Creator of David, but also the Creator of White Quills, the Creator of Old Person. I think being rectified with that Creator is equally important and equally available in either direction.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We are talking with Chairman of the Blackfeet Tribal Council, Harry Barnes. I want to talk a little about the Blackfeet government, of which you're a chairperson. I've been in Montana for 26 years. I have heard again and again about dysfunctionality of Blackfeet governance in contrast with what I've heard about some other tribes, so it's not just an anti-Indian rant I'm hearing, and I don't know if it's accurate or not. But I'd like to get your assessment about the historic functionality or degree of dysfunctionality of Blackfeet governance. A, and B, if it has been dysfunctional, why are you on the council and what are you trying to accomplish?
It's an interesting question. I just want to, I hearken back to a few years ago, a Cascade County commissioner got caught driving under the influence in the middle of the night down 10th Avenue South and beat it partially because, but it was became a fight amongst the county commissioners, and he finally got unelected, and then opened a house of prostitution and drugs just west of town.
A model politician.
Absolutely, and I'm thinking that county is really dysfunctional, and I've seen it in our state. So if you've seen it in our tribes, probably. Okay. It's to a certain degree there is a dysfunctionality, but a lot of it stems also from this is not our traditional form of government. This government was given to us by the same benefactor that made us dependent wards, and that's under the 1934 Indian Reorganization Act, and they rubber stamped a form of government that created tribal councils. Okay, we were never governed this way, and since the treaty, we were governed by a Indian agent, and then we became giftees of this form of government. So this form
government
of
was
government
was imposed on you.
That's right. And if you look at our national form, there's three branches supposed to be equal. That's arguable anymore. But the tribal forms of government is in a straight line. There's a tribal council and the courts and then the people. Why is that so important? Is because the people have no form of justice, because if my courts start misacting, handing out rulings I don't like, I fire them.
You have the ability to fire the judges?
That's correct. They are subject to the tribal council.
And this is not the idea of the tribes. This is the system.
This is the system that we inherited from the federal government. And so that's what leads to some of that functionality, because you as a tribal member say, whoa, wait a minute, that council member can't do that. You go to the courts for justice. Now the judge then has to weigh giving you justice or keeping his job. And so that's...
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and that's part of the dysfunctionality that we struggle with, because now the feds have a hands-off policy because of the Indian Self-Determination Act.
That explains a lot. I did not know that.
That explains the dysfunctionality, because between those two laws, the people are almost cut out of it. They give the council the power, so they only have to deal with one entity. So they don't deal with the people. Now, when our government fell apart, the Blackfeet tribe actually fell apart, we ended up with two separate councils, two separate treasurers, and we had two separate employee bases. That's the situation that I moved into when I was elected. There were actually five of us, total of nine council members, five elected, and we chose to move it in a different direction. And so that's what we're doing now, is we're trying to move our government. We had broken just about every relationship we were in, whether it was the Bureau of Indian Affairs or the state or the feds or any other number of entities. You know, but the relationship we probably damaged most was that with ourselves. Disunity and disharmony spread throughout the entire community during this 9 months of complete
when
shutdown.
When are we talking about?
October 2013. It ended July 10th, 2014. They wouldn't talk. They would only shoot barbs back and forth at each other through the press and blame each other. And so the federal government stayed away. The Bureau of Indian Affairs stayed away. And so we were stuck trying to wallow in this. My reason for running for office was that we were completely dysfunctional, and it was hurting the people terribly, and our community and our reservation.
I did not realize, given my ignorance, the imposed governmental structure that you've described. That's a problem. Is it your opinion, and you're chairman of the council now, that system, even though imposed, whether it's the Blackfeet or other nations, can work well to represent the interests of your people? Because if the answer is no, it leads in one direction. If the answer is maybe yes or yes, it leads in another. What's your response?
The answer is no, but you can modify it. It's extremely difficult under the rules, the current rules and the laws. It's extremely difficult, but there is a move, and there was before, to try to reform our Constitution and thereby separate the courts from the council. That would be a big advantage, because it gives you credibility and gives the people hope that there is justice through their courts as well as creditors. So,
are you for continuing that effort to reform the structure or not?
Absolutely. We have people still actively involved in it. The last council shelved it in contradiction to the wishes of the people. We have resurrected it. We're going to try to put it back together, get something back that the people then can vote on that will separate those powers, thereby ensuring justice, because there's no investment on the Blackfeet Reservation because there's no justice system. So even a banker wants to know that he has the opportunity to get justice. And so without that, it's hard to get investment, which hampers economic development with no capital.
We know there are a lot of social problems of serious nature. You've described some of them on the Blackfeet and other tribal and other nations around the country. You've just touched on the economic problems, lack of employment. My question is, one, is there hope? And if there is hope of change, constructive change, what can tribal people do, from leaders to lay people? And what can us non-tribal folks do, even if it's stay out of the damn way?
It's a good question. You know, is there hope? We always believe there is. We were not believing that at the Blackfeet Reservation for 9+ months, really for 2 years. I know from past experience being involved in business and talking with different groups, there's two ways out of poverty. There's only two ways: a job and education. We're trying to get our people educated. We're encouraging them. We have some good things actually happening on the reservation. So our job is to help create jobs. Our job is to try to gain employment for our members. That's extremely difficult because we have no money. That's the reality we moved into, is they spent forward instead of. And so we do have to work on all of those social ills, and we're doing it. We're taking one step at a time. We finished audits that weren't done. We're still plowing forward, getting back audits done. That will help us become more credible, and we as a government need to do that. I get a lot of feedback in my office from a whole lot of wide range of different sources, and there is renewed hope. I don't know that I could characterize it as confidence in their government yet, but a hope that it's moving in the right direction. I think there's a hope present today in the people that wasn't there a year ago. After a year, I've seen a rekindling of that spirit of unity, and or one tribe. And that's important. If you remember what I said earlier, the worst damage we did was to the relationship with ourselves. That needs the first attention. And so I'm seeing that. I hear it from people on the street. I hear it from people in Helena. I hear it from people in Heart Butte and in Babb. I hear it from business people that have been in Browning for years, Indian and non-Indian. We have a lot of non-Indians that live in the reservation, and they've shared with me, too, that the friends they've talked to are feeling very hopeful. So we have hope, and we're moving forward. So, and it's an entire council. We still have some things to fix from the MAC, but we're doing that. And in doing that, we're moving forward.
Chairman Harry Barnes, I feel as if we've just begun a highly interesting discussion, but I regret to say we're out of time. And I want to thank you so much for being with us on home ground. To our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week. Home Ground is an independent production of Artemis Common Ground and does not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station. Post-production by Valtron Recording Studio. We welcome your ideas for new programs at www.homegroundradio.org. Home Ground is made possible by grants from the Liz Claiborne Art Ortenberg Foundation, Cinnabar Foundation, Humanities Montana, and the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication about issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.